Welcome to episode 13 of the Just Keep Spinning podcast. My name is Andrea, and of course, I'm here with...
I'm Andrew.
And we have a special guest today. Say hi, Mario.
Yo, what up? What up, party people?
So, Mario, some of you out there might know him as D-Rock. So, let me go ahead and really quick, our Instagram is Just Keep Spinning podcast. Our email is justkeepspinningpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, where else, Andrew? Like anywhere.
Anywhere podcasts can be listened to.
Anywhere you can listen to a podcast, we're on there. And real quick, Mario, do you have any Instagrams you want to share?
Yeah. So you can find me at Durockism on IG. And then my website is www.durock.one. You can also find us at KDIF. 1029 and at Radical Writers Worldwide.
Awesome.
So worldwide.
You have a lot worldwide. Of stuff going on.
World domination.
So real quick, I'm just going to highlight some events that are coming up in the Valley. So let's see here. So I have next September 14th through 15th and up in Flagstaff, Zia's Records is actually going to have like a pop-up with Dark Sky Brewing. So I'm going to assume that Zia might be holding on to some good stuff that they're going to take up there to sell. I can only assume. So, but they're doing like a collab with them. So I know that there's no record store up in there in Flagstaff at all. So that's why it's really cool. They're going to be kind of servicing that community for that. And let's see, on 9/4 at the Rebel Lounge, MB Alexander is going to be playing. Doors open at 7:30. It's 21 plus. And it's also going to be with Soft Deadlines and Night Blossom. So it's his homecoming show because he's actually here from Phoenix. And is there any events that you wanted to highlight?
Yeah, coming up, we got Funk Sunday next Sunday. What would that be, like September 9th or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe it's the
9th. What's today, the 7th? Yeah, so yeah. Or the 2nd, so 7 days is 9, yeah. September 9th.
Nice, quick math. I love it. Yeah, so Funk Sunday is a collective of just like boogie DJs, myself, Funk Machine, and DJ Mars One. So we'll be broadcasting here at KDIF 102.9 from 12 to 3.
Dope.
Yeah.
And then you could find that also. What's the website we could stream it from?
KDIF.org, or you can download the Listen to My Radio app, and it's on there. So.
Oh, cool. I did not know that. That's good to know.
And for people who are listening and don't hear all the background noise, we are actually recording live at KDIF Studios right now.
Yeah, KDIF. We got a live show going on in the background.
Two live shows with us.
Yeah.
And then.
So, yeah, we keep it fucking real. And
it's a plethora of activity.
Yes, exactly. So,
Yeah, this is my part. We always do it on, like, for our guests. Do you know the number one song on the day of your birth?
Man, I should have studied up because I listened to you guys, too. No idea, man. No idea.
It was If You Leave Me Now by Chicago.
What?
Yeah, that was the number one song. And then the song that we always say, like, you know, when on your birthday.
You mean
when you're 14, my bad.
They always say that. We always say it all the time. So they say the song on your 14th birthday is the song that's supposed to define your life, which I disagree with. But we'll see what yours.
So we'll just do the top five today.
That's dope.
Love Takes Time by Mariah Carey was number 5. Giving You the Ben, and then there's a whole bunch of dots because I don't have the whole title. But Pebbles. Ice Ice Baby by Vanilla Ice was number 3.
What?
I'm glad that wasn't number 1 for you.
I don't have the full title, but James Ingram. And number 1, Janet Jackson, Black Cat.
I'm jealous.
What? Yeah.
I'm jealous.
Wow. Crazy.
So how do you feel about your number 1 song? Are you satisfied? Are you lukewarm?
You know what? It actually has no impact on me. I'm oblivious to that.
Oblivious.
That top 5. Pretty much. So.
Girl, I'm familiar with some of it. Not really all my style, right?
Yeah, I think the years leading up to that were some really good years, like hip-hop wise, you know what I mean? So
that's what you're hoping. You're like, what's everyone?
Formulative years.
I mean,
I'm
sure like on the hip-hop charts it'd be different, but we used to like the Hot 100, which is basically the mainstream jams,
top 40.
And so yeah, everyone has the different songs. I can't remember mine. Mine's Mariah Carey when I was 14.
You were 14. Yours was Heartbreaker, but not the remix, the original.
What?
And mine was Smooth by Santana.
What?
Yeah.
That's a pretty
I was like,
one.
My life hasn't been smooth, though, so I'm like, that doesn't go.
Dope.
So, Mario, have you had any pickups this weekend at all, like for records, or what was the last pickup you had?
Shoot, the last pickup I had, believe it or not, was a couple months ago at the Beat Swap meet. So picked up a couple of gems from there.
That's good. Yeah. It's always fun to dig around at actual like record swap meets and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, stores are always awesome, but I feel like sometimes you get a different vibe from the swap meets than you do the stores.
Yeah, so the last one I got was, I needed double copies of it. It was MFSB with a Family Affair break on it. So that was a good one.
So far, there's been a few people that were like, oh, it's not my first copy. It's my second copy. It was cleaner, so I picked it up.
Yeah, I needed doubles of that one. The cover was kind of jacked up, but I swooped it for like $1, I think. So
yeah, for me, so does that make a difference for you when you're picking up? Like if you, like say the cover's like kind of like, you know, like the corners are bent or something, like do you care about that? That's something you personally care about?
Personally, I don't, because I always, well, depending on the song, like I try to get, like if it's a break, for example, obviously try to get doubles of that, and they go in the same sleeve anyway, you know.
So yeah.
I know for a lot of people that's a no-no because they tend to get scuffed up, but I keep them well hidden, put away. So
I notice people who actually like know how to DJ, like because I've bought in like a DJ collection before, and that's how it is, that they'll, because they want to be organized, so they're like, they'll put the doubles in there, because like I know there was something that I had and it had like four copies in one. What? Like in one, yeah, but there was like different, because it's like the remixes, the originals, and then like the instrumentals and stuff. Yeah. So I always thought that was so interesting, so it's, I like that you brought that up actually.
Yeah, double copies, it's dope. But yeah, sometimes they get scuffed up in there, you know what I mean, depending on how old the record is or whatever. So but yeah, I still try to get doubles from time to time.
What about you, Andrew? Have you had anything?
I got a couple 45s from Grand Avenue Records, but that's pretty much it. Nothing special.
Nice.
I had, you picked them up for me, but I told you I wanted them. Grand Avenue Records had the, they just had like these, it's like the Munster Talks, like Frankenstein.
Oh, what?
Like, yeah, like some like obscure records. Yeah,
like vocals?
Novelty, I guess you would say. So I collect music, obviously, but I collect stuff like that too. Like I have a lot of like Disney records and like just random like haunted house records. I don't know. I just like noise, I guess. Any type of noise. So that was my pickup. But pretty much that's all I've had. I've been good. That's my thing, has been trying to be good and not buy as much. So I've been keeping to my promise.
Yeah, but we were trying to be good. We talk about that every week, but we're trying to be good.
Trying to make some mean mashups with those those obscure records.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, we have.
That's dope.
Quite a few.
Also, if you hear Frankenstein spinning, you're like, is that her? Frankenstein talking. So, and I guess we'll go ahead and
let's get into it.
So, sweet. Mario, where were you born?
So, I'm originally from El Paso, Texas.
Oh, shoot. There's a lot of history there.
For sure. Yeah, so I was born in the 70s, El Paso. Man, I left there when I was like early 20s.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So you did a majority.
I did some time there.
Yeah, some time in El Paso.
time in El Chuco.
Yes.
Yeah, just spent my formative years there. A lot of early influences, exposures, from the early 80s to through the 90s. Those were like the golden years for me out there and stuff like that. Relocated to a couple of places. Actually followed my brother to San Francisco for like a good year. I lived out there, so that was pretty dope, like mid-90s. Lived in Colorado, lived in Maryland, actually, Baltimore, outside of Baltimore, Glen Burnie, Maryland. And then moved here. Like, I've been here since 2004-ish.
Oh, okay. You've been here for a minute then.
For a minute, yeah. Yeah, so Phoenix is home. But pretty much just a Southwest native, you know what I mean? So love the Southwest.
We have we all have our own specific cultures, but we do share certain commonalities in the Southwest, so.
Yeah, for sure. Love it out here. It's home, you know what I mean? There's a lot to do. I kind of get the best of both worlds because I have a lot of friends in California, too. Of course, family and friends back home in El Paso, so it's kind of like the midpoint, pretty much. So
you came here when you said you're like in your 20s, right? Mm-hmm. well, probably, yeah, in your 20s.
Yeah.
How was the music scene growing up in there, and as in El Paso and different places you were from?
You know what? I wasn't so much connected to the music scene as I was to the kind of the hip hop scene. So, like, for me, those formative years happened probably like 83, 84, like taking it way back, like being a shorty, you know. My sister, she was into like freestyle, she was into electro, just like all the dope stuff that was happening at that time, you know what I mean? She was also a popper, you know, so she was like,
oh, really? That's awesome.
Yeah, she was hitting the teen clubs, and actually, that filtered to my older brother. And then it kind of like filtered down to me, you know what I mean? So that's what was happening, like the heyday of breaking at that time, breaking and popping. So,
and were you into like graffiti culture as well?
You know what? I kind of like seeing the movie. I know it's like mad mainstream, but seeing the movie Beat Street was like, you know, we kind of wanted to be like those guys. Yeah, you know what I mean? Even though like finding out later, you're like mad devastated because those are like commercial painters that did those, you know, backdrops or whatever, you know what I mean? Because it was like a whole, from what I understand, like a whole union gig that they had to like basically farm that out to, you know what I mean? So I guess the epitome of that era would probably be like, you know, obviously Style Wars or Wild Style, you know what I mean? That's more authentic, but we didn't see those movies till a lot later, you know what I mean? So yeah, musically, got connected to like electro early on. What else was big? We used to like practice like break-in daily to like Roxanne Shantae, UTFO. Like those were just big records that were in rotation, you know what I mean? And those records came directly from the swap.
And what I think is cool back then too is like, so you know how back in the day there's no internet and nothing like that, but at the same time the culture everywhere was sharing the same views, like, yeah, like to pop to and mm-hmm. all that other stuff. So I always thought that was really interesting, just like how, like, it just makes me think, like, how did that even happen? Like, I know it happened because people would travel and music, yeah, travels, but it's just so interesting because, like, here, so I'm a little younger, but I totally remember my tío was into all that stuff, and that's the music I listened to because of him. So mm-hmm. like that was always an influence on me. So I even remember that here in Phoenix around the same time, around, yeah, the same era. So that's interesting to think about, I guess.
Yeah, even hearing shout out to Serge, by the way, from Crates. Even hearing Serge's interview last week, I was just like, you know, hearing that he had a swap meet tape, and they got it from El Paso, like that resonated with me, you know what I mean? Because, you know, around that era we were getting, you know, there was a couple spots we would go to. Sound Warehouse was like, it was just too expensive, you know what I mean? If we cop something from there, it was because we had birthday money or something, you know what I mean? We cut some lawns, whatever the case is, but mainly we were getting our rotation of music from the swap, you know what I mean? So what we would see on, you know, TV, like Yo MTV Raps, for example, that was hugely influential to us, you know what I mean? So El Paso is one of those scenes where it's more like, I don't know, kind of mainstream media driven, you know what I mean? But like kids like in the neighborhood, we always had our ear to the underground, but a lot of those underground tapes, they came from the swap, you know what I mean? So
do you crazy. Know exactly, was someone locally making tapes, or was it something that like someone in a bigger market made and it trickled down and kind of made its way around, or was it just you don't know?
You know what, I don't know. My guess is it was just, you know, somebody locally who just made it their hustle, you know what I mean? El Paso, I mean, it could have been that it came from LA too, because we had there's just a big connection between, you know, LA and El Paso, yeah, for some reason. It's, yeah, crazy. There is. Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of just people that travel to and from those places, you know. So
do you remember like one of the first records you bought?
Or tapes? One of the first tapes had to have been like Canine Posse was the earliest one I remember. Ain't Nothing to It But to Do It. It's kind of the first one I remember. It was a bootleg tape from the swap.
It's always a bootleg.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Yeah. And then just, you know, we would also have, like, this is jumping ahead a little bit, but, you know, beyond that era, we had friends that, you know, they would move away or whatever, and we would try to stay in touch. So they would record their local radio stations, and then we would try to, we would trade like tapes back and forth too. You know what I mean? I know that's what a lot of people were doing in the '80s and '90s. You know, so
that's cool. I didn't even know that.
Yeah, really interesting.
Like I know
that's how you got music back in the day.
Yeah, share it cities. From market to market, basically.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, because there's always like that dude that like knows all the underground music, and you're like, how the fuck does that guy know all this music when it's not even close to here? It's in New York or a different state or city, and you know they're miles ahead.
Yeah, yeah,
and
for
you
sure.
Wonder how they got that music, and I never really thought about it in that sense.
Yeah, for sure. So for me, that person was my homie Skew. Big shout out to Skew. He was very like in tune, and we're talking like probably like early to mid 90s, you know. He was into the rave scene and would make the trek back and forth to LA a lot, you know. So he was like visiting, you know, the hip hop shop and like spots like that, but he was bringing, you know, just dope house music at that time, you know what I mean? And he would turn peeps onto it, you know. So yeah, so that's how I got to hear a lot of that, and just that fire that was happening back then, you know what I mean?
Growing up, what kind of music did your parents listen to, music or your family and kind of in general, or was it something like they kind of listened to music but it wasn't something that they were really into?
You know what, I don't, to this day, like I have asked my mom, you know, like what her musical tastes were. Like my mom was like, you know, working, she was raising five kids, you know what I mean? So I don't really think she had the chance to develop musical taste, because she was focused on
taking care, yeah,
putting food on the table. But I would say my musical taste came from like my sister, like I said, my brother, and then just kids in the neighborhood that were just like, you know, getting hip to, you know, the golden years of hip hop, you know what I mean? So the Big Daddy Kanes, you know, Biz Markies, and there's so many, Chubb Rock, like there's so many just classics that came out of that era. And then, you know, of course the gangster rap kind of got ushered in around that time too.
Were you into gangster rap, or did you like some of it but you weren't like super about it?
You know what? It kind of hit epidemic style, as they say. You know what I mean? In El Paso, when Colors dropped, that changes a lot. You know what I mean? That soundtrack, because it was a mixture of like, you know, kind of like the G rap or whatever, and then, you know, just mainstream hip hop. Not mainstream, but like artists that we like. Like I think Big Daddy Kane was on that record. Ice-T was on that record. He was a little bit more gangster. So they kind of, I don't know. For me, that soundtrack was like, kind of like it towed the line a little bit between the two, and you know, yeah, I liked it just as much as anybody else did, you know what I mean? It wasn't until later where we're just like, because during that era, like, you know, the gang era in El Paso in the 80s, like it was bad. It was, you know, people got killed, people that I knew got killed, you know, I guess just like everywhere, you know. And looking back, we're just like, you know, it was probably due to like a lot of the negativity in that music, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so it was definitely in, because when you say influential, it doesn't necessarily always mean positive.
Right.
So, because I remember, like I was telling you right now about my tío. So my tío and my tía were all into like UTFO and all that. And it was like, I can't even remember exactly when, but I felt like it was just like overnight almost, that it seemed like they were into more the gang culture, mm-hmm. and they really got deep into that to the mm-hmm. point to honestly they never really got out of it, kind of thing.
Yeah,
so it's like, it's funny that you say the same observation, that it was kind of like it just kind of happened like out of nowhere in the blink of an eye sort of thing, where it's like, oh okay, like there's definitely probably, like you're saying, Colors is like kind of probably a flag, or you could say like it's a defining moment and kind of thing. But
in the timeline of things, yeah, it was, because it was, you know, it was on heavily on Blast, and you know, art imitates life, right? And in our scenario out in El Paso, this little town, it was like everybody wanted to imitate the art, you know what I mean? So yeah, it was crazy. So
I have a question. Do you think lowrider culture originated in LA or in El Paso? Because I hear some people.
There's a debate.
Yeah, there's a debate. I was like, well, I want to ask, you know, I know you're from El Paso.
I'm not the.
Or do you think it's one of those things where maybe it was like the same thing was happening at the same time, maybe in a sense, like the communities are similar, like they're not the same, but and it's just something that happened, because there's always so much debate about that, like it's a big thing where they're like, no, it originated in LA, no, over here, and it's like,
yeah, origin stories are always pretty hard, you know what I mean, to kind of pinpoint. I think it was definitely distinctly, you know, Chicano, you know, movement, you know what I mean, so where it originated, where it originated from, I mean, I'm not the expert on that, you know what I mean, I know that there's stories about, like, how El Paso got its nickname, you know, being called El Chuco, you know, with Pachuco culture happening there and stuff like that. So there's a debate on that too, you know what I mean?
Yes, I know it very much.
But yeah, I just, I stay out of that debate because that's not my lane, you know?
You're like, I was in some stuff, yeah.
That's definitely not my lane. Some lowrider dude will hear me and he'll, when I go back home, he'll probably beat me up or something. I don't know.
He'll be like, hey buddy, I heard you. So you're from El Paso, so obviously oldies is a big thing there, but like, mm-hmm. are you in actually like in a like a collective here that of funk collectors?
Yeah, so originally just to get kind of back to the timeline of my story, so I was heavily influenced by hip-hop at an early age, you know, started breaking, started popping like 83, 84. My sister and my brother, I'm pointing to him because he's in the room.
He's right here.
He's right behind me. He's going to fact check me.
but yeah. You're full of shit.
yeah, so there was teen clubs that they would frequent. One spot called Wheels Plus. That's where all the breaking crews would happen, or breaking crews would go to battle. There was another spot called Numbers. So out of that were just, like I say, early musical taste, early musical influence. Fast forward to like the whole gang culture, gang era stuff. Like we kind of recognized that was bringing a lot of negativity. So, you know, we ventured off into other things. You know, that's when we started getting heavily into graph. You know, probably like 80, 88, 89, we started like messing with it. You know what I mean? And then by the 90s, there was like just the whole golden era of hip hop that, you know, came into play. But just like as far as the funk goes, like my earliest recollection of that was actually a graffiti homie of ours. He goes by the name of Play, P-L-A-E. He was like visiting from L.A. and he brought us like a tape, like just like we talked about, you know. And it just, distinctly recall, like, it had just, like, some crazy, like, boogie on there and funk. It had, like, Parliament. It had, Kana was on there. It had George Clinton. And it was, like, mixed, like, so seamlessly, like, from one song to the next that, like, we bumped that tape. I'm not kidding. For probably, like, a good 2 years straight. So that's my earliest recollection of, like, hearing the funk. You know what I mean? So, but yeah, and then kind of later in the 90s, I'm kind of jumping around a little bit, but we had another homie come down from San Diego. His name's Saki. Shout out to Saki, IBM, WST crew. He brought like a lot of the breakbeats with him, you know what I mean? So like we were not hip to, you know, what they were dancing to in New York, like during the B-boy era, you know what I mean? Like the James Brown, the... who else? And there's so many. Wilson Pickett, like just an incredible bongo band, you know, Jimmy Castor. Like, we got hip to that very late, you know what I mean?
Because it was different back then, like you're saying.
Yeah, because we were breaking to like the electro stuff, you know what I mean? Like I talked about. But he kind of introduced that to the scene probably like mid 90s, you know what I mean? So I was hooked on that, you know? I got hooked on like collecting breaks and. Just because at that point we started breaking again too, you know what I mean? So we were already old, those old dudes trying to bust a move. But yeah, so fast forward to, man, probably like I'd say mid 2000s, I heard another, you know, just going back to the whole funk genre, I heard another CD that a homie of mine, Danny Boy, out in Vegas dropped. And it was like just all like 80 BPMs. It was called 80 Deep, and it was like,
that's cool.
It was like all like just like that boogie funk sound. You know what I mean? The just the yeah. It's just so many dope dope songs on there. Stone City Band was on there. Rick James is on there. Like, just that sound. So I was like, damn, that's a dope sound. But it wasn't until like 2010, went out for a show in California and heard the Funk Freaks play.
Okay, I was just like, yes. What? Looping it all right back to now.
Yeah. Yeah, so 2010, we did a show called Served Fresh Daily with the homeboy Dammit. Shout out to Dammit. And we were looking for something to do like on the Friday before the show, and they were playing at a spot, I believe it was called Malone's at the time. I think it's still called Malone's in like downtown Santa Ana. And man, they were crushing it. I was just like, what? Like, there's like, so the genre just goes like so much deeper than what I had heard, you know what I mean, on even on the 80 deep and then all that mixtape that my homie gave me. So so I kind of got hip then and started just like little by little kind of building up my collection, but probably just started collecting more within the last like few years, you know what I mean.
So what is it that you love about funk, like what draws you to it?
Well, I think it's for me, it's been different things at different times, you know what I mean? So in the 90s, you know, it was definitely, you know, a lot of James Brown, you know, those records, like I talked about. I'm going to probably refer to them over and over and over again, but that was all about just like the dance, you know what I mean? Like dancing and breaking and getting your top rock right and, you know, going down to the beat and, you know, freezing on beat and all that stuff. Now it's just like, I say that this is the last genre of music that I want to collect because it's just, I don't know, it moves me. Like, I've heard, like, throughout the decades, like, you get exposed to so much and, like, you try to find what, like, still moves you.
Like, your lane, yeah, I know what you're saying.
And I related to kind of just bringing it full circle because those were, like, my earliest memories, you know what I mean? Like, that electro sound was, like, you know, infused in my brain like at 7 and 8, you know, like popping to those
are
beats,
like your fundamentals, you know? Like you learned that and it stuck with you.
Yeah, so to learn that there's just like this whole like genre that's just like, what? Like it's like discovering a whole different world, you know what I mean? So, and I'm still learning, you know what I mean? I'm still really new at collecting that genre, but it's super dope.
Yeah, because I feel like some people still don't know that, like, I don't like to use like this phrase, but like in a sense there's kind of like a funk revival. Like it's always been there, but like more people are gravitating and enjoying it now, thinking like, oh, there's new stuff. Like there is new funk music being made still.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, like obviously the modern funk is definitely huge, you know, huge scene. And there's a lot more stuff that I need to just get hip to, but finding the time is like always challenging, you know what I mean? So that's why I'm thankful because I'm plugged into, you know, some brothers that are just like, you know, really like digging and keeping me sharp, you know what I mean? Like, because I hadn't mixed in a long time, you know, so you get rusty. I kind of fell out of it, you know what I mean? But these guys have kind of like sparked, you know, just like that desire to
brought
go
it back
out, to go out and play. And I hadn't done that in a lot of years. So
how did you feel when you first came back to play, like for people? Like, were you nervous, or were you more like it's riding a bike where you're rusty at first, and then you're just like, oh, okay, like I'm good.
I still get a little bit nervous, to be honest with you, but it's good because, you know, after like practicing and just like, you know, I started like with things I'm collecting, just BPMing more consistently, so which helps your mixing, of course. But I'm still learning. I'm always a student, you know what I mean? I don't think that you ever stop learning, especially when it comes to, you know, records and music and DJing, you know what I mean?
Because it's impossible to know everything. There's so much out there.
Yeah.
There's so much.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. It's a long journey for sure.
So
I'm just thankful I'm still here.
So you said you were like you got back into DJing. So were you DJing early on in like in the 90s? As well, or was it just strictly like dancing?
Yeah, so around 99-2000 is when I started getting more into like digging for breakbeats. Like I think probably as early as like late 98-99, and then I got my first setup probably like late 2000. Just like I remember what it was like just a Newmark setup, like DJ in a box, you know what I mean, just so I could start learning and stuff like that.
Do you remember how much that was by chance? Like, like ballpark range, not like
probably like exactly. $500. Yeah, okay. Yeah,
it's just not bad.
They were the kind of the. They're, I mean, they're nowhere near like techniques, but they try to make them look like techs. But they're, you know, they're belt driven. You know, just yeah, they're really bad. Anyway. Anyway, yeah, so that was my first setup, and then just started collecting like breakbeats more, and then. Was playing out probably like early 2000s, from like 2001 to like 2003 or 4, you know what I mean? So before I started focusing on like my family, raising my daughter and stuff like that. So yeah. Yeah. But I mean, I steadily like collected, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you're still involved and you did your own thing, but I know, cuz our daughter's 13, so it's like, mm-hmm. we know what it's like when you have a kid, like literally all your energy goes there, and then the little bit you have left goes into anything else you can stretch it, yeah. like spread it about. So
for sure.
And everybody that we've talked to so far that actually has kids, they say the same thing, like, yeah. you know, I was into this, and then I kind of had my kids, so, you know, I calmed down for a bit because I focus on family, and as I get older, it's a little easier to kind of, like,
yeah,
do your own thing a little
to
bit.
To divide your time, you know what I mean? And my time has been spent, you know, I divide my time between, like, music and then graph, too, you know what I mean? Because I've always loved that aspect of the culture.
And writing. Writing, bicycling.
Yeah, this is actually really new, you know what I mean? Radical Writers, yeah, that came together last year, but it's like, it's again coming full circle, you know what I mean? Because like after, so it was breaking like in the 80s, right? And then after kind of breaking died out, you know, it was graph, and then after that it was like, or wait, no, it was breaking, then it was BMX, and then it was like graph, you know what I mean? So now it's like, it's kind of like it's an evolution. Like I went on a bike ride last year, 2017, just like a community bike ride, and I was just like, oh man, I miss this so much in my life, you know what I mean? It's like that freedom that we had, because when we were kids, you know, it was just like such a freedom, you know what I mean, to jump on our BMX and just ride to the swap, you know, get some free stuff.
It's just so easy. Yeah, you're like, you know
it was our way to be I'll mobile, you know what I mean? Yeah, so it's just like I don't know. It's like
it's
being
just
a
different
kid again.
Way to experience, like because I think when you're driving a car, you're like, I'm going from here to there. But when for you're sure. on a bicycle, you're enjoying yourself. You're taking in your environment. So
yeah,
it's a different experience.
Yeah,
so do you
sure.
listen to music when you ride?
Yeah. So it kind of speaking of that, it kind of sucks because we usually do have a speaker, but it got lost somewhere in transition, so we got to replace it. It was actually my bro's speaker, man. I know he's bummed
he's
out
like,
with me.
He's like, I know I had, you touched the sore subject right now.
So, yeah, we try to bump some tunes, you know what I mean? It just, yeah, it makes for a different experience, you know, because the rides can get quiet and stuff, so. But, yeah, we're enjoying it, you know.
And you have your own podcast for Radical Writers, right?
For Radical Writers, yeah. The homie, Psych, runs that. Shout out to Psych. He does that on Monday nights. And it's actually really dope because it's, you got a lot of just like-minded people that are kind of like feeling the same thing, you know what I mean, that want to go back and touch that piece of their childhood and talk about it and just speak on like what was happening like here, you know what I mean? So it's really it's dope. It's like a kind of a labor of love, and you know, we got some dedicated people. Shout out to Manny too. He heads that up over at Crates.
Yeah, I was
like
gonna say, because you guys actually record at Crates, right? Mm-hmm. And so when you do the podcast, you guys do like a ride every time?
Yeah, so it depends. So typically we do rides on Sunday nights, that's at different locations in the city. So like tonight we're gonna ride at El Dorado Park, probably ride out to Tempe. Sometimes we do Tempe Beach Park, sometimes we do downtown. But yeah, sometimes rides will happen after the podcast, kind of like spur of the moment, you know. So
yeah, because that's what the biking life is about.
Yeah, it's crazy because we get some of these guys that, because there's, you know, obviously different sizes, right? So these guys are bringing out their bikes from like the 80s, you know what I mean? So they're smaller bikes, you know what I mean? And it's it's a little tougher to get around when you're older and you're bigger on these little bikes, you know. So these guys, sometimes they gas out after, you know, like five blocks or
you
something.
You don't realize how much you've grown. You're like, oh, shoot.
Girl, I used to ride this bike hard.
Yeah. I remember going for my first bike ride, just like community bike ride out of PBC, Phoenix Bike Company. And, yeah, I was riding this little 20-inch, and I was like, dude, what? I got to get a bigger bike, man. Because if you're out of shape, you're like, you're feeling like way out of shape if you're riding that little bike. You know what I mean? So
yeah, you're like, I'm supposed to be enjoying this ride and cruising along.
Yeah, for sure. So, no, but it's good times, man.
So let me bring it back to music real fast. Yeah. You said you collected breakbeats. So have you always just, it's just records you've collected, correct? Mm-hmm. So you've always just been collecting records over the years.
Yeah, just that specific genre. You know what I mean? And like, it's what's dope about that genre is that, you know, breakbeats come from anywhere, you know what I mean? They can come from David Bowie, or, you know, they can come off of, you know, Latin jazz records, or, I mean, there's just so many, you know, influences that really hip-hop in general, you know, draws from, right? So
because a breakbeat's not one specific thing. It could mean you're like breakbeat, but that could almost mean anything, right?
Okay. Yeah, exactly. Like last week I played a couple weeks ago, played over at the Lemoncade, and you know, the breaks that I was playing, they're off of disco records, you know what I mean?
I love disco. I know, like, it's coming, I hate to, like I said, I hate to say it, it's coming back, but yeah, people hated on it for a minute, but all those artists, like the musicians behind it, were so talented.
Yeah,
and
for
I'm
sure.
Like, oh my god, I love disco
for sure.
Do you see the similarities between disco and funk?
Yeah, absolutely.
They're really,
sometimes they get a little blurry. The lines
get so blurry on that, because those bass lines are almost like
very
similar.
He
so
loves
when I listen to bass lines,
dope.
I'm like, okay, well, and then I hear that bass line, I'm like, I can sworn I heard that like on a disco track, and this is a funk track, and
for sure.
So like I said, those lines really get blurred.
Yeah, yeah, no, definitely. You can hear, you know, records from like just like on that kind of like threshold, you know, where it starts becoming more electronic.
Like, is it like around 82?
Yeah, well, like 80, yeah, even like as early as 80, you know what I mean, where you can still hear like the disco influence sound, and then you start hearing more of like that kind of like that boogie funk sound, you know what I mean, emerging. So yeah, but disco is highly slept on, and that's another genre that like I'm kind of fond of. I like disco too. I like Latin jazz, I like boogaloo, you know, I pretty much like anything you throw my way from like that era, you know, like late 70s, early 80s, you know.
Yeah, like I'm almost guaranteed that I might like it. I can warm up to it. It's something I can really appreciate.
Yeah, for sure.
So have you learned anything from jumping and like moving different places? Because so when you were like in Maryland, and were you kind of like in a scene there a little bit? Were you doing like breaking, or like exactly what were you doing when you were like in Maryland?
So Maryland was, that's a great question. Maryland was primarily for work. So I was transitioning out of one, you know, job, one place of employment. No, I'm not a full-time DJ. I'd like to gas myself up and think that's what I am, but I'm not. I have a 9-to-5. But yeah, so that was mainly for work. But what was dope about that experience is that we were we were visiting New York a lot. You know, so to answer your question, yes, in a way, because we actually met some house dancers out there in Maryland, and it, what's dope about hip hop is that, you know, you, no matter where you go, you're always gonna find a familiar face, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? So you're always able to relate to somebody. We met some, you know, really hardcore hip hop heads out there. They were throwing like B-boy jams. Shout out to Daddy O and Fresh Mama out there. And they were going to New York too. So it was just like a natural progression for us to dig deeper into the culture by making the rounds to New York. You know what I mean? So, and we worked for, the cool thing was, is at the time we worked for an airline. So I was working for Southwest at the time. So we would fly into Long Island, take the railroad into the city, and then like stay all night, you know, and then fly back in the morning. It was crazy.
That's cool. So would you do standby flights?
Standby flights. And of course, you would pick the empty one so you make sure you get back and get to work or whatever, because sometimes we'd have to work like that afternoon. But it was an experience, man, you know, seeing like for us, we were on a heavy trek at that time. So we're talking like 2003, 2004 to go even further into the roots of hip hop dance. So we were studying like about up rock or the rock dance at that time. So, you know, we networked with guys from Brooklyn. Shout out to King Up Rock, Dynasty Rockers. Shout out to PJ. Like, so these guys were like hosting practices in Brooklyn. So we were making that trek, you know, almost every week. Actually, it's crazy because the New York Daily News was at one of those practices. I kid you not. And they caught me for an interview, like, just randomly.
Joe, this is not my first interview, guys.
I've been in the New York Daily News. I'm just kidding.
I'm fucking big time.
So what was the interview about? Was it about, like, the culture, like, what was going on in the culture at that time?
Yeah, so it was about a school called IS-93. That's where a lot of the jams were happening out in Brooklyn. You know, that's where a lot of the re-exposure of the rock dance, if you're familiar, was happening out of those out of that spot. Like, there's a spot, there were some jams that they called like the dollar jams, you know, and there was like dancers that would come from all over the city and they would just get down, but the epicenter was like kind of like that rock dance. So that's like, if for those who don't
know, I was gonna say, what's rock dance, what is that?
So the rock dance is like the precursor, in a lot of people's opinion, you know what I mean? That's my opinion too. That's like the precursor to b-boying, you know? So like when you see like a b-boy top rock, for example, you know, before the go down, that's like, that has elements of the rock dance in it. You know what I mean? So there's debates, you know, that's not my lane. I tried to make it my lane.
I'm like
not.
You though, where I'm like, I have opinions, but I'm more like, yeah, who cares? Like, not who cares, but it's like, you know, everybody's allowed to have their opinion and stuff like that.
Yeah. So there's like, now there's a lot of information that has come out. You know what I mean? I think I'm pretty sure that we were some of the earliest students that were like trying to like understand it. You know what I mean? And just try to maybe, you know, bring it to the forefront somehow, you know. But there's debates on, you know, which there was definitely a more prevalent style at one time that came from Brooklyn. So that's where a lot of people were going just to like learn, you know what I mean? Places like IS-93, the Dollar Jam, all that stuff. So, but then you had a whole like Bronx history that came out, which was crazy too, you know what I mean? And they're just like these dancers.
Because the boroughs out there have their own, they have their own individualistic styles, right?
Yeah, okay. For sure. So, you know, it's like, that kind of like, in a way, changed my understanding of what, you know, hip hop was, you know, and how it kind of got packaged together, you know, and kind of what boroughs get credit for what. It's like going back to that origin story, you know what I mean? People like to take credit, but in reality, it was like hip hop was like distinctly a New York, like whole New York phenomenon. You know what I mean? So it's like the whole Chicano thing too, or the whole Pachuco or lowrider culture. You know what I mean? It's just a phenomenon that was happening, you know, in multiple places at the same time. So
when you came here to Phoenix, what did you notice here? Because this is my thing. So I'm born and raised here. Mm-hmm. He's practically from here. He moved here when he was like five.
Las Cruces, right?
Yeah.
Right on.
Yeah, my side of family from Las Cruces.
Nice, nice.
But you were born in Burbank, right?
I was born in California.
Yeah, born in California. Yeah. So,
My family's from like Norwalk area.
Oh wow.
So yeah. And then my dad's side of family is from Las Cruces. And
did you spend time out there? Cruces?
No.
You visited.
I visit, but there's not much. There's not much out there.
So are you green or red, dude?
Huh?
Green or red?
He's red.
Red.
Nice. See,
and if you that's don't a New Mexico theme.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It is.
If you don't know what we're talking about Chile.
See, we all know he's a green or red. Oh, yeah.
I mean, Andrea is a green, and I'm red.
Okay, no, it's I'm green because I feel like I can consistently get green chili everywhere, but it's hard to get a good red chili.
Yeah,
that's my thing. Not that, like, you can do it bad, but I don't know. I'm just picky about my red chili, I guess. But
yeah, usually red is, for me, it's like mad. It's always too hot. So I'm like a fan of green.
I mean, there's the red versus green argument, and then who has better tortillas. And that's just,
that's what we talked about with Zerd.
Yeah, tortillas. We talked about that with, yeah, tortillas. I mean, there's always a debate
about something.
Yeah. With, like, brown people debates.
Have you guys been to El Paso or no?
Did
you?
I've been there, like, once when I was younger for, like, okay. a family reunion. Yeah. On my dad's side of the family, it's big.
Yeah.
So we were there at some park. I don't remember where it was. It was a lot of people I didn't know.
Scott at park. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know.
He's like, wait, are we family?
Bro.
What year was it? What color were your shirts?
No.
Our shirts were teal.
Yeah, El Paso's dope. Food-wise, it's got some of the best. I mean, everybody always says that, right?
I know how it is, yeah.
But yeah, I get a...
Do you get upset when people talk garbage about Tex-Mex, like about like food, like Tejano food? Because there's so many people that I'll notice, they're like, oh, like this, and like, oh, but except, you know, the Mexican food in Texas. I'm like, dude, it's like regional. Like,
yeah,
you
yeah.
people, I feel like I get upset about that with anything, with food, music. I'm like, you have to understand that all this stuff is regional, especially back in the day, because everyone was a little bit like more off in their own pockets and their universe.
Yeah.
So it's not that the Mexican food in Texas or here isn't authentic compared to LA. It's
right.
just there's different, you know, Mexicans were either on the land already or they migrated from
right,
those
right.
areas closer to that state.
For
so
sure.
It's just that it's a regional thing. It's not that it's not authentic. That's,
yeah.
that's my thing.
I don't know. For me, I think when I think of like those, like that term, for example, I think of more like San Antonio area, you know, more Austin. When I hear that term Tex-Mex, because El Paso is not, you know, I consider the food, I mean, to a large degree, it's authentic. You know what I mean? It's just, you know, the influence comes from Chihuahua, right?
So, yes,
because
exactly.
Juarez is right there. So, yeah, definitely. But what was the question? Sorry.
Oh yeah, no it's okay. I'm gonna. I didn't forget. I remembered. So
when
I'm gonna ring
the food.
Back
it's
around.
Hard.
Yeah, we get into food, man.
Sorry.
No,
I'm
it's
hungry.
It's all good. Me too. So my question was: so when you came here, since you're originally from El Paso, mm-hmm. you spent, you know, a good amount of time there. You grew up there, raised, born. And then you went to, like, Maryland. You hung out on the East Coast. You even went to San Fran, hung out there.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a lot of people here that are not, from Arizona.
Right, right.
Like, I know he's technically not from here, but to me, he's been here so long.
Yeah,
so he's
yeah.
pretty much raised here. He's kind of from here. So I always hear people complain about Phoenix.
Word.
And I,
okay.
Which I understand some of their complaints, because I feel like there is a lack of community here. And mm-hmm. that was the point of us mm-hmm. starting the podcast, to, like, get people's stories so people can
That's
hear
dope.
Where everyone's coming from.
For sure.
Like, how your background influences you. And I always say, like, I always say this almost, like, every episode, because it always is relevant, but, like, Phoenix is, like, in the shadow of L.A.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, like, mm-hmm. we're, you know, when we're younger, like, L.A., there's so much more history there.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bigger community.
Mm-hmm.
They're a little bit more in tune, I think, with themselves in L.A.
Yeah.
So did you notice that when you came to Phoenix? Like, how did you feel about the community here as far as, like, when you start getting into the community of, like, music or breaking or whatever you started kind of venturing out into?
That's a great question, because I didn't do that. Actually, I didn't do that right away. You know what I mean? Because, like I say, focusing on work, focusing on family. But what I know is that, you know, Phoenix has always had, I'm basing this from a hip hop perspective. You know what I mean? I know that El Paso and Phoenix has always had, like, a real strong connection. You know, El Paso, Phoenix, Albuquerque. You know what I mean? There was always, you know, writers that traveled back and forth, you know, between those cities. You know what I mean? So, like, I know early in El Paso, we had NG Crew out there. We had DJ Coyote, Serpent City Records, shout out, coming to El Paso, like, very early on. You know what I mean? So it was always, like, a constant migration from, you know, just these different areas in the Southwest. You know, we were kind of making the rotation. You know, we had heard about, like, Furious Styles Crew, you know, in the 90s, you know, had crewmates that came out here to participate in their events. So I always kept that kind of frame of reference as far as, like, you know, holding the city in, you know, a certain regard. You know what I mean? So I love it here. It's beautiful. It's home. You know what I mean? I consider myself a native. Well, I am a native of the Southwest. You know what I mean? So, what people don't understand is that there's, you know, there's a lot of heavy hitters that come out of our respective scenes. You know what I mean? You're speaking on El Paso, you know, you had you have like dancers who have been like on the major shows, you know, competing, you know what I mean, who have made a lot of noise in just different scenes, you know, same from here, you know what I mean. So I'm just, for me at this point in my life, I'm just about giving respect where it's due, and I love it because it's there's wherever you go, you know what I mean, like I mentioned earlier, just within hip-hop or just within, you know, Latino communities too, you know, you find there's a familiarity to it, and that's, to me, that's beautiful, you know what I mean, because that you're crossing cultural,
it's a shared boundaries. Yeah, yeah, it's
shared
like
experience,
shared experience. So it's like there's things that you can share, that you can go, you're like, I know I can go here to Phoenix and I know that I'll see myself or people that I know.
For
like,
sure.
I don't know you personally, but I know you in a different way. Like, we've, on another episode, we mentioned too, like, about records or that, like, there's people that we don't know, like, on a personal level. Like, we don't know if they're married, if they have kids, but we know what they collect. So we know them in a different way.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's kind of like a different relationship you have with them.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So it's like, but I'm glad you talked positive.
No, I love it here, man. It's dope. The scenery is beautiful. Like, there's just so much to see. You know what I mean? Culturally, it's just like, you know, it's like I say, it's just, it feels familiar, and it's become home. You know what I mean? So it's dope. I like it.
So up to basically recently, you were, like you said, like we had said, you're involved in your group, the Phoenix Banqueros.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So was that just something just appeared one day, or is it just like a collective thing that you guys decided to do, or what is it?
That's a great question, man. So over the last year, actually KDIF has been like the epicenter for a lot of positive, you know, a lot of positive things that have happened. And that was, you know, that was one of them, you know what I mean? Just linking up with, actually met Mario first. There was, you know, this area where we're at, it's a school building for those listeners that don't know, but there was a bunch of orgs here, and there was a, you know, a few artists that were working out, you know, out of the school area. They actually had a room, and Mario was practicing his craft. He was actually buzzing hair or cutting hair, so that's how we linked up, you know. And just, you know, over time, we all realized that we had this, like, similar, you know, interest in, you know, boogie funk, you know, just in conversation. Like, he had owned a lowrider. And later on, you know, Funk Machine came down to play a set. Franco invited him here to play a set at KDIF. And that's when I met him. And we just, like, got to talking. And we're just, like, we shared a common love for the music. And then obviously, you know, having like the funk freaks come out who are like friends of mutual friends, you know, just kind of like, yo, that inspired us, you know what I mean? So we just kind of came together and started like really consciously pushing, not that it hasn't been done before here, you know what I mean? It's probably just, you know, things work in cycles, right? So it's probably a cyclical thing, you know what I mean? Shout out to the OG DJs out here, because I know there's OG DJs out here that are hip to that music, but it's just, you know, for us, you know, we were just inspired and wanting to just kind of like push it more.
So it was like an organic thing where you guys kind of started talking, like how I was saying, you get to know people in a different way, and then you're like, for sure. Oh, and then you kind of build upon that, and you're like, oh, we should get together and actually, you know, kind of do something
for sure
with it.
For sure.
So I think that's cool. I was excited when I saw, because I'm like, I didn't know you guys were like an actual group, and then I saw the Instagram and I'm like, oh shoot, they actually came together and like they're a little collective. I'm like, I like,
yeah,
that.
Yeah, cool. And then out of that, it's crazy because there's just like-minded people that are coming like to the forefront, you know what I mean? So we're of the opinion that, you know, that type of funk goes really well with like, you know, the oldies, you know, the soul, you know. And
that's what we wanted to ask you too, because there's like that overlap, like of like people that are into funk usually are into soul
for sure,
but then there are people that are into only soul, mm-hmm. and they're not really into funk, but mm-hmm. it's like a lot of these lives, like they go hand in hand, like with not necessarily that if you like funk you're into lowriders, but they all kind of like meld together.
Yeah, for sure. It's just like it's a common ground between, you know, between people, the lowrider scene, you know, that type of music, you know, cruising on a Sunday, you know, either you're going to the cruise and you're going to get hyped, so you're bumping some funk, right? Or you're, at the cruise, and it maybe it's winding down, so you're like, you know, you're playing the oldies, you know what I mean? So it's just, to me, it's all beautiful music, you know. It's just I think it's dope that we're making a conscious effort, because it's such a big departure from what you hear on mainstream. And that's what's dope about KDIF, is that, like, we're playing, we're heavily music centric right now, because that's the content that has come to us, right? But it's like really good music, you know what I mean? So
how did you get actually involved with KDIF?
That was because of the homie James Syke. Shout out to Syke, who is a South Phoenix native. He actually invited, this was like, man, June of last year. There was we had met because of an art show called Vatos Raisin Tacos last year.
Okay, was, like, yeah, I remember show. That one, yeah.
Yeah, so that's the first time I met Syke, and we just, you know, we vibed off each other, just, you know, stayed in contact with each other. And then, so that show was like in May, and then like in June, he's like, yo, I'm going to be DJing at KDIF, man, you want to come down? I was like, what's KDIF? You know what I mean? Oh, it's this radio station in South Phoenix. And like, that's where I met Idiom for the first time too. Shout out to Idiom, and Franco too. Franco is like the community outreach coordinator here. And yeah, so it was just like a dope introduction. I was like, what? I'm going to be like on the radio and I'm going to be DJing? Like, I'm mad rusty, but all right.
You know? Yeah, I'm cool,
dude. So it was just a dope experience, man. And then from there, they did like an art show here. And then Franco and I got to talking, and we're just like trying to like bump up the station. And he let me know, hey, we're getting some grant funding in, you know? So we can build out programming and stuff like that. So last November, I put in to be the content coordinator, and I got it. So it was kind of like,
congratulations.
Yeah,
awesome.
Well, I mean, from like June to November, you know, I was ramping up to that, like, you know, just trying to get content, like bringing the Funk Freaks out, you know. They were just gracious enough to just come down, and, you know, we had like a barbecue for them and stuff like that, and they loved it, you know.
I heard about that. Yeah. We didn't get to that, but I did hear about that, and every person that I've talked to that's kind of voiced on it, I was always like, it was so awesome, the feedback is always so positive, so you for guys sure. did a good job with that.
Yeah for sure. Shout out to Chicano Barber, because he was the one we kind of in a way piggybacked off, because he was the one who brought him out. Like, we're not taking credit for bringing them out. It was actually Chicano Barber. They were doing a show at Desert Rose, and yes, you know, like I say, just friends of friends that live out in Orange
it's
County.
It's just making, like, when you network and make connections too, yeah, like in that, it just like stuff just comes together and
for
like
sure
happens,
for
yeah.
sure. And I was just like, yo, it's a shot in the dark, but let's ask, hey, would you guys like to come down and be on the radio? And they were like, yeah, we're down, you know. So
yeah, the worst they could say is no. That's why people tell people about the podcast, because I mean, I have no experience interviewing. I have no experience doing anything. Like, I'm
word.
But we just came together, him and I. Like, well, we're married, but but we were like, you know, this is something that we're always delved in it, like all the time. So we're like, we might as well, like, you know, at least kind of like document it in some way.
For sure.
I guess so, and that way we could provide stuff to other people. And like I said, stories, putting in the community. But like, networking is totally a big thing. And
for sure,
you'll be surprised. Sure. Like, sometimes if you just ask, people will say yes, or they'll say maybe not now, but later, or like, you know, things always work out. And don't. That's why I tell people, like, if you want to do something, then just go and do it. Like,
yeah, for sure. That was the hardest. Like, that's what I advise people to do, is because I know it's been really hard for me, and that's just like learning to get out of your comfort zone, you know what I mean? And just being like, there's so many like missed opportunities that I've had because I haven't asked, you know what I mean? And I've made a conscious effort within the last, you know, 2-3 years to just be like getting out of my comfort zone. And yeah, the worst that can happen is they say no, but there's a lot more yeses and good things that come out of it, you know what I mean? It's crazy. So it's just like the universe connects us on like that level, you know what I mean? It's probably something that they were already thinking about, you know.
Yeah, you just put it out there. And like with, I feel like anything here, because like I said, everybody's like, oh, Phoenix, that'll never happen. So have you ever been to Palabras, the bilingual bookstore? It's on,
I've heard about it, but
you
I
should
haven't
stop
been.
By there, it's really cool. And dope. The Rosie, she's the owner, and she's super cool, and she's knowledgeable in a lot of stuff. But
heck,
like,
yeah,
with her too, she's like, you know, a lot of people say like, this can't happen in Phoenix, you can't do that here, it'll never work. But she's like, people say that, but if you just do it, she's like, you'll be surprised that even if you feel like at first, like, man, nobody cares or nobody's coming, she's like, there will be people that do show up and connect to it, and then it just builds from there.
Yeah.
So maybe right away you're not getting the feedback that you want, or like just the response. She's like, but eventually, you know, stuff takes time. It's a lot of effort. It's not an overnight thing. Like it takes a lot of sweat for sure.
Yeah, that's what we've seen, you know, over the last year building with the bike riding stuff. You know what I mean? Because again, it's cycles, right? Like there's been an established bike riding community out here, you know, and there's been like big cruises that have happened. You know what I mean? But I guess because it's so seasonal, you know, like summertime, it gets hot. People don't want to ride. Long story short, that's what we've been trying to do. You know what I mean? Even through the summer, like to speak to that point, like a lot of your success depends on how consistent you are. You know what I mean? So you got to just push through when you have like, you know, five riders out there, and sometimes we get 20 riders, you know what I mean? So it's dope, you know, but it's just pushing, you know, pushing through, being consistent, getting the word out as much as you can, and just like dope things can happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Even with this podcast. Last week, we were late a day on our podcast.
Word.
And it just being, like you said, consistency.
Yeah.
Even with that, you can see how it affects.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
for
so,
sure.
Like, when we had a discussion, like, you know, let's never do that again.
Yeah. Well,
and it's everything's a learning experience. And, too, another thing I wanted to say, too, is, like, if someone you see someone out there doing something and you like what they're doing, but you feel like you can put your own flavor and twist on it, mm-hmm. don't be scared to do it yourself either. Don't think like I can't do my own thing because there's somebody else that's already doing that.
For
it's
sure.
like there's
for
room
sure.
for everybody to do their own thing mm-hmm. and to grow. So
definitely.
You know, we're Phoenix is a big market, and
definitely.
We're actually the sixth largest city, I believe, in the U.S. So.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
So we're pretty big.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Nah, Phoenix is dope. I love it. Speaking to that point, so what we try to do with the Radical Rider stuff is support other bike rides too. You know what I mean? Because it's also important, you know, to if you see somebody, you know, that maybe has a similar mindset. You know what I mean? You never know what you can learn from trying to team up with that person or support. You know what I mean? If we don't support each other, movements die, right? So that's what we're trying to push to. You know what I mean? So we support other community bike rides, like we do Crescent Ballroom on Thursday. Like that's pretty new for us, but we're trying to get out there and support too, in conjunction with doing like our own stuff too. You know what I mean? So
and that's what we tell people too, like the record community sense is we got a lot of these old school guys, and some of them don't like the fact that there's like this resurgence of records and, you know, or vinyl, however you want to say it.
Yeah.
But it's like if you want the format to keep going, and like you're getting stuff reissued or repressed that you thought never would come back out, that maybe you thought you'd never be able to own,
mm-hmm.
but that's because more people are in the community, more people
right,
are buying.
Right.
So it's like, don't be scared if like in your little corner people are gravitating towards it. Like, be happy, you know.
For
like
sure.
It's
for sure.
The point is like we're supposed to share our experiences in life. So.
Yeah, yeah. There's been you know, just through the airwaves, you know, some of that. Just that feedback, you know what I mean, that has come our way, as far as I'm not going to speak into the specifics, but feedback that has come our way about KDIF, you know. But it's like, you know, speaking to lanes again, like we're trying to create our own lane. We're not trying to get in anybody else's lane, you know what I mean? So that's important too, you know, trying to make your own lane.
And I like that you guys are in, like how you had said before, remember you talking about how you like that they're in South Phoenix.
Yeah. So what was it like? Do you know why they've chose South Phoenix?
You know what? I could probably get like more, I guess, in tune with like the whole history. So like the brief history is that back in like 2014 or 2012, I believe, President Obama opened up the opportunity. I know that. So the process started like way back then. You know what I mean? To actually get the LPFM license. I believe it was a Center for Worker Rights that had it first. And I want to say they were actually located in South Phoenix. But I just, long story short, there was a lot of groundwork to get it here. 2011. Okay, so Ian's fact. This is my other fact checker back here. Yeah,
he has his little cruise bus.
So it's crazy because, you know, you just think of all the groundwork, you know, that was laid before. So since 2011, you know what I mean? from what I understand, KDAF didn't start broadcasting until like February of 2017. So, you know, fundraising had to happen. You know, it was just like this group effort. You know, the organizations who were involved with it kind of went back and forth. When they actually got the license, like, what are we going to do with it? Where is it going to be? And the opportunity opened up here because this is a school, a public school that shut down, you know. So somehow it came into be from that school shutting down and, you know, the building being vacant. So we have to have our antenna here for, I believe it's 3 years. Ian, is that correct? Ian's giving me the thumbs up. So yeah, that's correct. Whew. So yeah, it's wonderful that it's here in South Phoenix. You know what I mean? Because we get to bring something. And I'm not from here. Like I say, I'm a Southwest native, so I'm really a guest here. You know what I mean? So I've just been fortunate enough to stay a guest and, you know, just try to make some good things happen. Now, it's not always a smooth ride. There's ups and downs. You know, there's personality differences and, you know, there's just things that happen when you're working in small groups. But, you know, all in all, it's been just a dope experience. You know, we went from having like 3 shows at the beginning to, you know, I think it's like last time I counted like 14 or 15 shows now, you know, and we're steadily building. You know what I mean?
Because because like I said, being born and raised here, I think it's cool that it is in South Phoenix. I'm not from South Phoenix. Mm-hmm. My grandparents actually are from South Phoenix. Dope. So I grew up in the West Valley. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I wish that when I was younger, because nothing to knock like the radio stations back then, because I did learn a lot from the radio stations.
For sure.
But it's like I wish there would have been something like this for me to kind of like expand my horizons in different avenues. And
definitely,
I think that's cool because it's kind of like bringing, it's like there's always going to be that the mainstream culture.
Yeah.
But then
sure,
that always kind of like in turn there's the counterculture to it. Mm-hmm. So it's like this is kind of part of the counterculture in a way.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's cool that you guys are here in South Phoenix because it kind of a lot of I feel like Phoenix's like actual heart is in South Phoenix.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not from here. I'll totally admit that.
Yeah.
You know, from South Phoenix, and it's kind of like a lot of the livelihood and everything originated here. So I think it's cool that you guys are here and providing for the community here. So
yeah,
thanks.
Yeah. It's man, I'm just like I say, I'm just like so blessed to be a part of it. It's amazing what has happened over the course of a year. You know what I mean? I think, you know, we just have like a dedicated group of just volunteers and staff and, you know, trying to just bring like really good content. You know what I mean? Trying to bring like a heavy vinyl culture too, you know, because that was like my, you know, vision from the beginning is just like, yo, there's this whole like resurgence happening and it's important and we can play a part in keeping, you know, that aspect of music alive. You know what I mean? Because I think it's kind of rare that you do have a terrestrial station that's playing like analog, you know what I mean? Playing vinyl, you know what I mean? That I don't
that's
pretty
think
unique.
There is, I mean, at least not like a top 40, any of the mainstream,
right.
The Clear Channel ones, they're not
yeah, it's all that. It's all digital. And you know, they deal with, you know, having to play to, just talking to another DJ who's actually on KDIF, you know, they have their own set of requirements they have to deal with, you know what I mean, as far
as corporate
like,
environment.
Yeah, they have to do, you know, so many plays of a record, you know what I mean, they have to cater to certain demographics. And the nice thing is that we don't have to necessarily do that
because there's this more, I feel like I call it spreadsheet statistical,
right?
And not like, and it's nothing against any of those DJs because they all worked hard really to
oh,
be
yeah.
where they're at.
Oh, for sure.
But
for sure.
This is more like your ear to the ground or what, like what's going on out there, and I'm going to bring it to you, like my little world that I know about. And you guys have a variety of content.
Yeah, for sure. Where we've gone, you know, we've had shows that have, you know, come and gone already within the last year, but we try to keep it new, try to keep it fresh. You know, hopefully we're giving the community what it wants. By the way, if you know somebody who wants to come out and play like cumbias or something like that,
do you know, have you talked to Rudy?
I know Rudy, but
have you talked to him?
Yeah, I talked to him, but not about that. So that's
a good
point.
You should talk to Rudy.
I mean, just finding somebody who owns that many cumbias is the hub going to be.
He's like the cumbia king here.
I mean, yeah, because I mean, trying to find cumbias here,
big,
well, here
big
in
shout
Arizona.
Out to Rudy.
Yeah, L.
I'm gonna holler at you, brother.
L underscore Rudy.
Yeah, we're gonna get you on too, fool.
Yeah, well, it's dope because I was seeing like there's like shows happening. There was like a show last night, wasn't there?
Las Calacas,
something like that.
Yeah, so they're like a cumbia fusion band. We've actually seen them play once. No,
we saw them
play once, and then we went to their listening party. Shout out to E.T. from Tres Leches because he's the one that got us to come through there.
That's dope.
But yeah, and I thought it was cool. Well, wait, did we see him play? I don't know.
We seen him play like their first show ever.
Yeah, like, and it was just like in this backyard.
It was like underground, cool. Super underground.
That's dope.
It was like a dirt backyard, and we're just back there, and everybody's like drinking or whatever.
Yeah, that's what's up, man.
But it was they're super dope. Super dope music. Yeah. And like really bringing cumbia to the forefront with like a different type of
and they're from here, right? They're local.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then, you know, just with different type of flavor, and just like it's really, really interesting to see somebody else like their take on it, and I think it's really neat.
You should see if they want to come on.
Yeah, man. See, that's how ideas are born.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, just never get talking
live on the podcast, dog. That's what we do.
That's awesome.
Heard it here first.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be amazing. You know what I mean? It's an evolution. You know what I mean? And it's just. It's really neat to see, you know, that, well, learn the history. Like, I don't know, obviously, not being from here, but the little history that I know, you know, again, just from a hip-hop perspective, you know, a lot of top, like, graffiti writers have come from South Phoenix, you know what I mean? There's well-established crews out here and, you know, DJs that have come from here. And, you know, it's really dope to kind of bring it full circle in a way, you know, with something like KDIF. So, and to be respectful of that culture, you know. So
I asked Serge, since he's, you know, big in hip hop, so mm-hmm. I'll ask you the same question.
Sure.
How do you feel about, like, you know, the current market of hip hop artists, like from like SoundCloud and stuff like that?
You know, I'm not really, I can't really speak on it because I'm not really hip on it.
Not your lane.
It's not my lane. It's not my genre to speak on it. I'm sure there's cats out there that are doing their thing. You know what I mean? I just know that for me, like the trend, like hip hop trend, like within the last, you know, 10 years, I really have separated myself from it because a lot of it has just been garbage. You know what I mean? That's my personal opinion. And for me personally, it's harder to, it's increasingly harder to keep up with like the underground stuff. You know what I mean? I know that there's artists out there that are doing it, and there are artists that I like that are doing it, but they're more underground. But for me, it's harder to keep up with that, man. So I don't have an opinion either way. That's my answer.
I just don't feel like people can't connect to it as much as they used to be able to do it.
You know, on like a
personal level. Yeah, because these cats are putting out fucking music every week.
Right.
You know, straight online, and you know, it's a lot different than it was back then. So
yeah.
I always like to get, you know, people who have been in the scene before, just their personal opinions, whether it be having opinion or not having an opinion on it.
Yeah. I think there's something to be said about, you know, longevity, but there's also something to be said about creating, you know, that one piece of music that's going to be memorable. You know what I mean? And I don't know how you can do that if, you know, you're putting out just a bunch of music constantly that probably nobody's going to remember.
Like a song of the week, or like how kind of back, way back, like I would say 50s or so, like back then people were singles artists because LPs weren't a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like there was no concept of an LP, so mm-hmm. people didn't release LPs. They just released like a single on a 45 and maybe they would be on the other side.
Yeah.
So it's like, it kind of feels funny. It's like, are we kind of back to that, but in a digital sense? Like, you know what I'm saying?
I mean, it's possible. Yeah. Yeah. But then you have like, I mean, I'm not saying that I'm like completely unfamiliar, but you have like, what was the guy that passed away? It was like Extentacion or something.
Extenation. I don't know.
I don't know how to you pronounce it.
There's so
to
many
me,
things
Spanish.
Online too that like you read that, them, and I'm like, I don't know actually how to pronounce
it. That guy.
That guy. I know.
L1K. Rest in peace, by the way.
Yeah.
You know. But he's from that, you know, generation. He's from that genre. So you know what's and he blew up. So.
I mean, I think like one of the terms that I see a lot now is it's a classic. It's a classic, and I don't think
it takes time to be a classic.
Yeah, and these people are saying, you know, this song's a classic immediately, and you know, to me, none of this new music is a classic. Like the new Drake album, I read someone's like, oh, it's a classic. And, you know, I don't think anything Drake's ever made is a classic. Sorry,
I think they will be too.
Eventually.
The certain generation. Mm-hmm. Like, I was listening to DJ Jazzy Jeff, and he was on a podcast. I was listening to him. And he was saying that he used to start with certain tracks. Like, he used to know that there were certain tracks. Like, I would play it, and it would mm-hmm. get the party going. Like, I would play something like, man, it's not really picking up, so let me play this. Mm-hmm. It'll pick up. And then he started noticing, because the crowd started changing, the generation was younger and younger when he was playing. So he would play something like not newer, but maybe something like 10 years older, and mm-hmm. then the crowd would go off, and he's like, this is their classic,
right?
So he's
right,
like, yeah. You know, like, it's times change, people change, we get older. For sure. So as you get older too, even if you are hip to certain things, sometimes you can't, there's so much out there now, like, yeah, it's yeah. more, there's more people producing more content, so it's for like sure. I don't know, it's just the concept of a classic does change. But I get what you're saying, because it's like, you can't, to me, like, if someone drops something, you can't be like, the same day, like, this, you can say like, oh, this is amazing, but like, do you really know if it's going to be a classic like the same day like you heard it? Like,
yeah,
do you think that you can, like, do you, has there anything recently that you've listened to that's new that you felt like, man, like, this is like, this is good, like, this is it?
You know what? That's a tough one, man. I don't really connect to a lot of the new stuff, you know what I mean? Just because I'm, for me, my focus, my attention, I'm busy discovering, like, the old stuff, you know what I mean? Or rediscovering it. Because there's just so much good music, like, and you're never going to be able to hear it all, right? But for me, that's, like, that's what drives me, you know what I mean? Hearing that one, like, you know, boogie song that, oh, I've never heard before, you know what I mean? So, that's, you know, where I focus my attention to, you know what I mean? And, you know, being a DJ, I'm going to play what I like. So I spend my time looking for music that I like, you know what I mean? So unfortunately, I can't really connect too much to what's going on, you know?
Do you have anything specifically that you're, like, looking for that you haven't found, like, as far as record-wise?
Not currently. I kind of take it as I come, you know. I'm getting a lot of the influences as far as, like, titles go. Like, my homie DJ Mars One dropped this one version of this song the other night that just blew my mind, you know what I mean? So if it's anything, you know, that I'm currently looking for, it's going to be that record. But it's just being, like, in it, being live in the scene, you know, for me, it's a little bit different experience, you know what I mean? So I'm getting that influence kind of as it comes, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so,
interesting.
Yeah, but I mean, I've been there before, you know. I've had those titles on my lists or whatever, and, you know, chase those $100 records before, you know what I mean? But I guess I'm too old for that now.
Yeah, I think sometimes you collect and you get, like, a certain way, but then when you've been collecting for a minute too, you're like, well, like, yeah, you know, I get it, but if I come across it, I come across it. If not, I'm not going to chase it as hard. Like, if it naturally comes to me in the universe, the universe right. brings it to me.
For sure,
I
for
know
sure.
what you're saying.
Yeah. So, one thing that I always, I guess it's kind of like my point of reference is, and I heard DJ Coyote say this or mention it, is, you know, eventually one day all your records are going to probably end up at the Goodwill, you know what I mean?
So
that's like my point of reference. Like, it's only temporary, you don't take it with you, you know what I mean? You get to enjoy it just for, you know, for a short period of
while
time
you're here.
While I'm here, I'm gonna chase music that I like, you know. So,
and I think on that note, that was a perfect way to wrap it up. Is there anything else?
I just wanted to say, where's the 50-inch TV to go with?
We're on the money green couch. Yeah. Money green sofa right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're chilling on Biggie's sofa.
Well, I'm going to take a picture of this sofa. You'll get to see it.
Money green leather sofa.
Well, the 50-inch TV is right here, guys.
It's right behind us. We didn't
know Biggie was talking about Vizio.
It came as a set. I was looking for the TV that's as big as a house.
Oh, it's like it's a running joke, man. I tell people, I'm like, yo, that's Biggie's sofa right there. You know what I mean? It's an icebreaker. who knows?
Go ahead and hit us with those Instagrams.
Oh,
again.
Really? I just want to say one thing. Okay. So just one more thing. I just want to say, I know, like, you frequently reference throughout the interview that you're not from here, so you're not always familiar, like, privy to all the history.
For sure.
But what's more important than sometimes knowing the history is that when you're here and you're present in the moment, that you're contributing. So thank you for being here and contributing.
Oh, thank you.
And,
thank you.
You know, just being part of our community and like, you know, welcoming us welcoming you, and
sure.
just being present with us, because like I said, I always feel like there's just so much negativity in regards to Phoenix. And
yeah. Yeah.
So I was refreshing to interview you and hear so much good stuff. Thank you.
Yeah. Mad love. Mad love to you guys. Definitely love what you guys are doing. I don't know if you guys want to say anything that we've invited you to be a part of KDIF.
Yeah, we haven't said it yet.
Yeah, we have not made an announcement.
Maybe you'll edit that part out.
No,
we don't do editing.
This is the perfect time to announce it. Yeah.
Yeah, we will be working with KDIF pretty soon in the future here.
Yeah, so basically the podcast is going to be on 102.9, so it'll be another format that you can listen to us on, and once we get the exact details of the slot and stuff, we'll let you guys know. So thank you for reaching out to us though, and asking us to be a part, because
sure.
I don't think that was something we ever really even thought of, huh?
We just thought we were just gonna keep on talking about records and music
and our little in our baby little home. We're like, if you ever come to our house, you'll be like, oh, this is where you people are like, this is where you record. I'm like, literally in the den.
Yeah, in our office
next to my work computer.
Word. Yeah, no, it's so dope. Yeah, I you know, got hip to you guys, I think, pretty early on, and just love what you guys are doing, man. I like to throw the term organic around a lot when it comes to like KDIF and stuff that happens around here, but you guys are doing it, man. You guys are making it happen. You know, big shout out to you, you know, because it's a labor of love, right?
Yes, like, that's what we tell people.
It's not easy.
Yeah, and people don't realize how much work it takes, you know. I know that on the editing side, you probably spend a lot of time, you know, pre-production, getting your equipment, like that's hats off to you guys.
Trying to reach out to people not always literally canceling like an hour before to do it. It's like not anything against him, because we all have lives and stuff comes up, but it's like, it is definitely, you know, something that people don't understand, everything that goes into it.
Yeah for sure.
Thinking of like good content for specific people, and then having to change it on the fly to something else, it's not always easy. Mm-hmm. But you know, we've talked about that in one of our previous episodes, that we want to continue bringing positive good content for people to listen to,
whether it
be about music, records, books, just local people here in Phoenix. And we're going to grow this organically, and obviously we're going to start reaching out more to people like the Funk Freaks and things like that. We're going to start reaching out to those folks.
Dope.
Once we finally feel that we're going to be at a level for them to, you know, respond back to us.
Dope.
You know, so we're growing slowly.
Yeah, we're going to steal your word. You're going to listen to the next episodes, and we're going to constantly say organic watch.
This is organic.
Lane, organic. I'm just kidding. Stay in your lane, people.
I feel like D-Rock right now. D-Rock's with us in spirit.
Stay in your damn lane, people.
Actually, one more thing. Kidding. Where does D-Rock come from? So was that like your tag, your graph name? Or?
Yeah, so that's my graph name from the 90s. That's a whole other episode, guys. I know we talked about music, because that's a side of me that I don't get to talk about, you know what I mean? So it's pretty dope. But started messing with the graph just real quick, like 88, and then started actually painting, like spray painting graffiti in like 93, and just picked that name to run with, basically. So
I always like to hear people's like graph or tagger names, because especially you know, because they always, like you said, play PLAE. They always like your own twist on it. Like,
yeah, PLAE, play. Yeah, from LA. That's my bro, Malo. He's huge influence on me, like graph wise. Have had just like a lot. Been really fortunate just to be around a lot of just, you know, dope people. Saki, like I mentioned, Crayon from the Bay was a huge early influence, because he lived in the Bay. So
okay, yeah, because you went to go live with him, right?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, and that was like the heyday. Like I say. Without getting too much into it, that was like the heyday of graffiti out there, and like some very influential people painting at the time. Dream, you know, Crayon, of course, like so many people were out there. So, but yeah, that's where I got my name from.
Dope. All right, do you want to hit us with those Instagrams before we go?
Yeah, the Instagrams really quick.
Yeah, so my Instagram, at DoRockism. You can hit the station Instagram at KDIF1029. Then the Radical Writers is at Radical Writers Worldwide. You can also hit up my website, www.durock.one. KDIF.org. Also, we're doing a funding drive. I got to drop this. If you are wanting to donate to the cause and donate to keep our programming running, hit us up on KDIF.org.
Cool. And then really quick, our Instagram is Just Keep Spinning Podcast. Our email address is justkeepspinningpodcast@gmail.com. It's such a mouthful every time, but I think I finally conquered how to just say it. And we're available on iTunes, Spotify,
Google anywhere Play. Podcasts are available.
Yeah,
basically.
Anywhere. Yeah, and if you can't find it, because there's been a few people that are like, you're not on Spotify. And it's like, put in Just Keep Spinning, and then you have to scroll down to where it says podcasts.
Yeah, we're right there.
And we're like the first option.
Yeah.
I always just Google you guys, and it's like, you guys are first on Google.
Yeah, just Google Just Keep Spinning Podcast, and it'll bring up anything that you can possibly think of to listen to.
Yep.
Yeah, there's formats that we don't even know that we're on, just because we're on other formats.
Yeah.
And it, so like, starts, like, so posting.
It
just, like,
yeah.
It's organic.
Yeah
it's organic. It organically grows.
We organically get on stuff.
All right, I coined that phrase for you guys. No, dope. Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
Thank you for coming on.
Thank you for Kadif for hosting us and for reaching out to us. And like we said, we'll let you know the date and time and stuff when we're going to actually be broadcasting on Kadif. But in the meantime, don't stop digging and just keep spinning.
Thanks, guys.